And I've gone to Twitter, Steve Elkington, at ElkPGA. Follow. If you haven't already, you probably should. Unapologetic, does what he wants, says what he thinks, speaks his mind, and there's something to be kind of, something to respect about that. Another guy, just unabashed opinions, says a lot of things people don't like, but he doesn't care. He's the, whether it's print, television, or radio, he makes no apologies. He is Mark Spector. Our guest here in studio for the next 60 minutes, Mr. Spector, good to see you.
I'm not sure I could come out with quite as strong opinions as Elk has. He's a tough guy to follow.
And probably better off that you did.
Well, I like my job.
Yeah, there's that.
I'll even admit to needing my job.
Yeah. Well, it's good. You know what, when you, because I know we touch base with you, always like to get you on. And you said, well, I'm going to be in town. Mm-hmm. What if I swing by? I said, absolutely. You are a jack of all trades, master of all of them, you've endeavored to take on the task of writing a book. Now, I'll say it's interesting timing because yesterday I sat with two guys who both have written books, one of them just one, and I think the other multiple, and they were moaning over the experience of writing a book, mm-hmm. how it's not lucrative, it is a pain in the arse. And at the end of the day, it's great to have something. It's tangible, and that's your body of work. But writing books, a thankless process.
Yeah, if you break it down to an hourly rate, I think it's I make more money working at 7-Eleven, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I guess give us the idea, the thought process, and really the want to be an author.
Well, you have to, you know, I've been a sports writer for a long time, over 25 years. And, you know, at some point, we're all the same. We all think, you know, I should write a book about something. And the one thing about being a writer is no one's surprising me when they tell me how much work it is. I'm going into this thing knowing that it doesn't, you know, you sell a book and you make a couple dollars, but in the end, holy cow. Yeah. Like I say, the hourly rate's not real good, but you do it because that's what you do. It's kind of, there's something you should do in your career. I think we all have things in our career. We look at it and go, you know what, before I'm done, I got to knock this off. I got to do this. It's a bucket list thing. So I'm doing a book. And I thought I'd get into something, a subject that I've sort of, where I know all the bodies, where all the bodies are buried. I'm doing a book in the Battle of Alberta, but I'm doing it on the time when, you know, from 83 to 90, when the Flames and Oilers sent 8 consecutive teams to the Stanley Cup final.
You said that to me this morning and I had to stop and think, it's like, well, yeah, you think of that dominance, and granted, you know, two of them the Flames, the rest the Oilers. Mm-hmm. But that is a significant, it's hard for kids nowadays, if there's somebody that's 16 or under, to even think that that was possible.
Well, and that's, I think, one of the reasons why I think it's kind of a neat time. This book will not be out, I file it at the new year, it comes out next Christmas 2015. So save your pennies, folks, it's not happening right away. You know, I have an 18-year-old son at home. Almost 19. And he has no recollection of those days.
Yeah.
Right? He was born in 95. And he's a young adult now.
Sure.
And many of our listeners don't hearken back. You know, you and I can picture Steve Smith banking that puck in off of Fear's leg right now.
Yeah.
I can picture Hunter and Semenko. I can picture Paul Baxter grating on Mark Messier. Like, I could see that in my mind's eye.
It's funny. I remember that day. Like, I'm not quite as old as you, and that doesn't make you bad. But I remember that night I was playing baseball. It was organized baseball, and all that was on my mind was getting home to watch that game. I remember the diamond we were at, and I remember when it was wrapped up, I got on my bike, and I flew home because I could not miss the Oilers and Flames that night. Yeah. And then Steve Smith put it off the left. My mind was blown as a kid. And then you got to school the next day, and it's all anybody was talking about. It shook the world.
Well, our world.
Yeah.
Our world. And, you know, they still throw around the term Battle of Alberta. They will on, is it opening night in Edmonton? Not opening night for the Flames, I believe. Yeah. Opening night in Edmonton this year is a visit from the Flames. I believe it's a Saturday night. And they'll throw around Battle of Alberta on our Sportsnet broadcast. I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you, kids, you know, it's not the same Battle of Alberta.
Yeah.
Right? It's not as violent.
So it's
not as meaningful. The teams aren't the two best teams in the National Hockey League. Hopefully they'll get back there one day. But if I think enough time has passed that I think there's probably a lot of younger people who would dig some of these stories because they just don't play hockey today the way they did back then.
So 83, 84, 85, where are you?
Well, I'm, where am I? In 1983, I graduated from grade 12. In what? You know,
yeah, so
June of 83.
Yeah, so that's right in your wheelhouse then.
That's June. That's the, yeah. The Oilers had just lost to the New York Islanders.
Which I always,
in the Stanley Cup Final.
Which I also remember because I was obviously younger at that point. My dad was working. He had to go and work elsewhere to make money for our family. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a kid, I told my mom, hey, mom, you got to write this down so that when dad gets home in a week or whatever, that the Oilers lost to the Islanders. I wanted to make sure that I wrote that down because we'd have no way of finding out until he got home, right? So, but it's funny, the memories that you do have from then.
And at that point, you never thought, like, who knew the Oilers or the Islanders dynasty was over at that point?
Yeah.
They beat the Oilers for fun in that series and had won four in a row. And you knew the Oilers were pretty good back then, but all of a sudden in a 12-month period, by the time they got to the Cup again next year, Edmonton, they turned it over.
Yeah.
They were beating the Islanders for fun. That 1984 Stanley Cup was not hotly contested. No. I mean, they played hard and they tried hard, but
yeah.
It was a smoke show. Oilers win in 85. And then, you know, the Flames, meanwhile, are climbing that Bob Johnson mountain all the way with their 7-point plan. And you know what? 1986, they were better. I mean, they led that series against Edmonton. They led it 1-0. They led it 2-1. They led it 3-2. They won game 7 up at Northlands Coliseum.
That's right.
They were the better team in 1986. And I've talked to several people now in both organizations, and everyone's in Edmonton will tell you the same thing. Calgary was better in 86. There's no doubt about it.
I'll be curious to hear the people, or to read in this case, the Theo Fleury goal, where scores it, skates across center.
Yes.
What that meant to both teams, because I've heard plenty about it. I've heard that there were some in the Flames room that didn't like it. Obviously, the Oilers room didn't like it, and there's some in that room that said that's the reason we won, because we were so insulted and driven to come back and win that next game.
Well, Messier gave him the puck, as I recall. Gave him the puck.
Yeah.
Here! It's overtime of game 6. Take this puck.
Yeah.
I think he slotted it through Fear's legs, as I recall. I got to see some video on that to make sure I have that.
No, I think you're right.
But I do recall. Everyone remembers the celebration. And then down it came to Calgary for Game 7, and Edmonton won that game.
Yeah.
It was, listen, there's a lot of good tales. And, you know,
the Gretzky shot over Vernon. You think of stuff that we've seen on the intro to Hockey Night in Canada.
Right, poor Vernon.
For years.
Yeah.
Came from that, you know, 3, 4, 5-year stretch.
And the stuff that, you know, those were the days when there was a lot of games played that weren't even, there was no video room in Toronto. There was... many of guys said if they had a director of player safety back then, the Battle of Alberta wouldn't have been any good because half the guys would have been suspended. You know, Mark Messier did things to people in that battle that, like, we're talking 20, 30 game suspensions
today. Yeah.
You can't just skate up from the side and drill a guy in the jaw and then say, you know what? He ran me earlier in a game.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
Dave,
the justification,
right? And one of the things I found interesting is, you know, in a rivalry that just oozed violence, of among other things, great hockey, two of the best teams, lots of good players, lots of fun, funny things happened, but it was also highly violent hockey.
Yeah,
and probably, you know, we always think of Tim Hunter and we think of Dave Semenko, the two toughest guys.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, I think, the moment of peak violence was probably didn't involve either of them. It would have been Dave Brown and Stu Grimson, where one guy really got hurt.
Yeah.
Right. Even, you know, when Messier suckered McCowan was hurt, but he was playing soon after. When Eves, Messier almost killed Mike Eves, I believe.
Yeah.
Almost killed him.
I don't know
how much time he missed, but not that much.
The dislike was so natural and real.
That's
there was
awesome.
No, you didn't need bulletin board material. You didn't need to, I mean, people in Calgary would have hated Glenn Sather because he just, he was kind of that smug, young, he embodied what the Oilers were all about. I remember when Mark Messier, I was actually working the 1 year that I was in Edmonton, they had Mark Messier retirement night. And I think it was at the Jubilee or whatever it was. They had, before the night, they had the Messier honor, and Poplinski came up.
Oh, really?
And he was asked to come up and speak. And he basically said, I'm awkward now. I did not like you then. I've gotten over it slightly, but I'm not happy to be here. I wish I could tell you I was. This is uncomfortable. And I think for a lot of those guys, it still kind of burns within them. They're men, some of them grandfathers, all of this. But I think when that topic comes up, it's still maybe very deep inside, but there is some raw dislike for each other.
Is that the last period in Alberta sports where guys really did hate each other, where they didn't meet and golf all summer, where they didn't hang around the hallways of an arena after a game? And
Eberle's
chat.
A Calgarian.
Eberle's, Taylor Hall grew up around Calgary.
They're golfing in South Calgary.
Joel McGinley's a St. Albert kid, right? Like, is this the last era of true hatred? I was talking with Al Mackey the other day, of course, of the Globe and Mail.
Yeah.
He tells a story. He went up and did a piece on Dan Kepley a few years back, talking about, you know, among other things, the rivalry with Calgary. And Dan Kepley told him, to this day, he said, I don't own any piece of clothing that's red. Like, does anyone do that anymore? I think those days are gone.
Yeah. It's as we sit in with the politically correct world and Twitter and all, you know, be nice, everything. It's hard to believe that was actually real. That when the Oilers came to town, this town was seething. And if you were going up there, you'd better be ready because they absolutely hated you.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And, you know, I'd love to find out who it is, and maybe someone can help us out. Find me on Twitter at Sportsnet Spec. There was a guy or a couple of certainly one man who had season tickets behind the Oilers, the visiting bench at the Saddle Dome, who had a running repartee with Glenn Sather. And when you see there was a game, I think it might have been the game 7 goal that Tikkanen scored, they show Glenn Sather cheering the goal and then turning around and pumping his fist at this fan who he's hated for 10 years. He's been coming to this rink and this guy's been giving it to him.
Yeah.
Like, they were into it, you know, back and forth with the fans. Who's that fan? I don't know who that fan is, but I'd love to talk to him, man.
Yeah. And like you talk about it, it was kind of like a pyramid scheme. So at the top, in terms of violence, you had Semenko and you had Tim Hunter. And then you come down a little bit and, well, Messier and, you know, Joel Otto was no fun. And then it just kind of kept, everybody kind of had their different weight class and a different partner, and they knew it was going to be a long night. And the fact that they played each other in the playoffs the way they did, not just regular season.
Well, they played 8 times in the regular season to start with, plus a couple times in preseason.
Yeah.
And then they end up playing 5 playoff series. So, you know, and that, as we can all attest, and I think this is no secret, until the Oilers and Flames start playing each other in the playoffs again, you don't stand a chance of having a rivalry that, you know, it's even close to what it once was.
Yeah, you don't have the opportunity. And I still don't, they could probably play each other 3 years back to back to back in the playoffs. I don't think you get to that level just because the game has changed.
It's not, but certainly not as violent. And it was those violent acts that made Flames fans hate the Oilers.
Yeah.
And Oilers fans, they hate the Flames. Like, do you have a Neil Sheehy anymore that's going to chase, you know, Taylor Hall around and drive him crazy like Sheehy did to Gretzky?
Yeah.
I mean, he drove Gretz wild, you know, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Right. You had Tikkanen, who was driving somebody wild, but they couldn't understand him. You know, Bob Johnson blowing his nose in his tie. Does anyone do that anymore?
No. And I think, like I say, I think that's why it's great, because like you say, your son, who's a young adult, really only has video and YouTube in which to relive that.
Right.
So the stories, how are you, or did you go about getting the good stuff? Were guys really willing to give the good stories? Because like I say, we can go back and watch the Fleury goal and all that, but this book has to be about what you've never heard before, the juicy stuff. So were guys really willing to give
that? We're getting there, right?
Did you have to pry it out a little bit?
Oh, yeah, we're getting there. My interview process is not nearly done yet, but we're getting there. You know, for instance, I started, for many reasons, I sat down with Bearcat Murray for an hour yesterday. Bearcat told me a couple things.
I bet he would.
See, the trainers know a lot of stuff that nobody knew. And nobody knows.
Yeah.
And I also sat down with Barry Stafford, who was the equipment man for the Edmonton Oilers for all those years. And those guys, I'll tell you what, that's a great place for me to start. Because Barry said at one point, he was telling me something, and he said, geez, I don't know if I should tell you. Ah, he said, the statute of limitations has got to be up on this stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So now I take some information I got. You know, for instance, I won't tell you the whole story, but when the Grimson Brown thing, you know, for those who don't remember, they played a Sunday, Tuesday, back-to-back. The Oilers were traditionally had more heavyweights. Both teams were tough, but Edmonton always had sort of, you know, Edmonton had Semenko, Calgary had Hunter.
That would have been before McSorley, right? Like Dave Brown?
Yeah, that was 1980. Well, it was right around Christmas, 89-90.
God, guys will still say he was maybe the toughest ever.
He was really, really tough.
Yeah.
So Edmonton sort of had just always had one more guy. And at that point, the Calgary Flames and Tim Hunter, they had enough. They couldn't handle it anymore. They brought up Stu Grimson. Okay, we got this kid in Salt Lake City. He's pretty tough. Let's bring him up. So he fights Brown on Sunday night in Edmonton. They fight twice. But in the first fight, this kid wins. He beats Dave Brown. And that was quite a deal. Like, Dave Brown is not supposed to lose. He was the toughest guy in the league. So Dave Brown, by all accounts, did not speak for the next 2 days. He did not speak. He came to practice. The one thing he said, I shouldn't say he didn't speak. The reporters were all over him then the Monday, the off day, and the media churned a lot of this.
Yeah.
He told the media in a very short interview, he just told them about the game the next night. He said, don't go for coffee. That was his warning to the sports writers. Well, the next night he did fight Grimson. But the Oilers, as speaking of the statute of limitations, the Oilers doctored up his jersey to a large extent.
Mm-hmm.
Stu Grimson had grabbed the left hand. Brownie was a lefty. Stu Grimson had grabbed the left hand in the first fight and mitigated Dave Brown. And in fact, clocked Brownie and beat him. Beat him clean.
Yeah.
And that was a problem. So they, and all this, I've got a killer good description of what happened here. But I'm saving it for the book. Boom. They doctored up his jersey.
Yeah.
And I did talk to Stu Grimson last week, and he said, you know, he said, I grabbed for that left hand on the second night we fought. I couldn't grab that left hand.
Uh-huh.
And there's a reason for it. Flat out cheating.
Yeah.
Flat out cheating.
Well, Warner always tells a story with Rob Ray in Buffalo. He'd have the tie down on the back and the front.
Yeah.
I forget who he fought, if it was Probert or whoever it was. And Ray would always get out of his jersey, right? He'd always be, half naked.
Yeah.
By the time he was done.
Those were the days. And they didn't have those rules.
Then. Yeah, I think it was Domi. And in the one fight, the jersey came up and he kind of got pinned and he couldn't do it. So they had the second set of laces on the front of the jersey. I mean, that was a science for those guys.
Well, John Kordick had like almost a tearaway. Remember the old tearaway football jerseys? They could tackle a guy and get a left with his jersey. John Kordick, they just pull right off. And the other guy was Tony Twist, who was a big, big, strong guy. And you know, I was talking with a linesman, Randy Mitten.
Mm-hmm.
Two local linesmen, Randy Mitten and Sweden Ox, did the lion's share of those Battle of Alberta games. And he said the problem was, well, twofold. When a guy like Tony Twist, his jersey just come right off. So now he's bare-chested, which the league didn't like.
Yeah.
Right? That's why they invented the tie-down rule and changed things. They don't like two bare-chested men standing at center ice. Pounding on
Perish
Can you
the
imagine
thought.
That?
Yeah.
But the problem wasn't just that the opposing fighter couldn't have anything to grab onto with a Rob Ray or a John Kordick or a Tony Twist. The linesman had nothing to grab onto. They couldn't stop the fight because they couldn't. There's nothing to hold on to. So it was, I mean,
being
just.
Being a linesman in the battle of, it's like being a rodeo clown, taking your life into your own hands. Mark Spector with us here in studio. It's 8:21 here till 9 o'clock. Reliving the Battle of Alberta. Good stuff. If you have Battle of Alberta memories, if you were in the crowd or you saw something, or lived something, or outside. Hey, send them in. Love to hear it about it this morning as we're with Spec till 9 o'clock. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Get in on the conversation now. Text the show at 960-960. Boomer in the morning. Only on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All you need to do is bring the topic of the Battle Alberta from the 80s to the table, and things start to pick up. Business is picking up. Reliving the Battle of Alberta. Mark Spector with Sportsnet here in studio for the full hour, doing a new book that'll be available in a year's time. But reliving the Battle of Alberta, the inside stories, the great stories, some of them we've seen play out, and a lot of them you had to do a little bit of digging, and Speck is the man for the job. We asked some of the people, some of you guys listening, hey, text us in your stories. What do you remember about the Battle of Alberta? And this is a classic when Dougie Risebrough had Gretzky's jersey and tromped the hell out of it and cut it to pieces with his skates inside the penalty box. That doesn't happen anymore. You know, that's not something we see every day. You want to talk about natural and just true disgust for your opponent, that's it.
How about the time Bob Johnson wanted his players to get used to shooting pucks past Oiler goalies, so he brought out two college goalies, put them in Oiler practice jerseys at practice, put them in net, and said, okay, boys, shoot away. Like, going to see that anymore?
That is great. Yeah. The Otto Messier face-offs, just two big behemoths.
Yeah.
Otto about 2 feet over the face-off dot. This one here. I watched two Oiler fans chirp a guy in a Fleury jersey the whole way from the Dome to the C train station. At the station, Buddy finally had enough, took both of them down, himself included, in a ball of human beings all the way down the stairs to the platform level. What a gong show. That would be the other thing. The fights that took place on the ice. Imagine what was taking place outside the building.
Oh, there was the violence. Hey, listen, we need some of this. Right?
I think so.
Okay, Flames fan.
I don't care to be involved in it,
frankly.
Next
Oiler game, clock the first guy you see in a blue jersey.
Yeah,
okay?
Take him down a flight of stairs.
Oh, didn't someone chuck a rum and coke over the boards at Gila Point one time?
Oh,
the assistant coach of the Flames?
Yeah.
Then the guy holds a press conference in Edmonton at the behest of his lawyer. He apologizes and said, but you know what? I was sick of the Flames.
Yeah.
So I dumped my drink on Gila Point.
Yeah. And then in the 90s, we had to settle for McTavish pulling out a mascot's tongue. That was the violence in the Battle of Alberta.
That's sad.
2.0, I know.
2.0.
But it's a, but it is a, like I say, it is a great idea. And I also wonder too, for a lot of people, the city of Calgary, and I'm guessing to a certain extent Edmonton, but for the city of Calgary, it became so transient, people moving into the city for a long time, you couldn't find people who were actually born in Calgary. They, you know, moved here. So a lot of Calgarians that would have lived in Calgary during those times, maybe they've moved on or there's just not as many of them. So to now be a Flames fan, to be able to pick up something and read these stories, it's going to get you, I would think, get you even more invested in your team.
Well, and I think we also, maybe I'm speaking with some, you know, a little hopefully here, but I think it's time to watch these two franchises come back.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's time, you know, the one up north has been god-awful forever, and then the rebuild that's taken a long time, and, you know, maybe they're going to get somewhere. Are they going to make the playoffs this year? I wouldn't pick them to make the playoffs, but I think they're ready to take a step and get a little better. We all know what's going on here in Calgary, and it's not fast. Like, this is the problem with the new system, man. Look at free agency that just passed. In the old days, you'd snap up a couple of good free agents and get good quick. Those days are gone. You have a good player now, you sign into a 7-year contract.
Yeah.
You know, so the rebuild, I mean, I don't need to tell Flames fans this because everybody can see what's going on. But they don't have, if you want to do them right, they don't happen fast. Brian Burke tried to speed it up in Toronto by making that big trade. And Phil Kessel's a good player, but are the Leafs, is that rebuild?
Yeah, I don't
did
know.
It ever get anywhere?
On,
are they and, any good? Are they going
to
win a cup?
Yeah, and to his credit, I mean, if you have a chance to get a guy who's less than 5 years removed from the draft, he's a 30 to 40 goal guy, and
it's
you
a
can.
Good player.
And he's available. I guess you take the for sure thing and.
Sure. Fair enough.
And then all of a sudden, you know, Sagan looks like he can be a superstar. And
but I guess
whole deal.
If you don't draft, I sat down with Brad Treliving yesterday for 30 minutes, and he's of the same mind. If you don't draft and develop, everything else you do doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So Berkey, let's say he makes a, I mean, he did. Phil Kessel's a hell of a player. He's a top 10 scorer every year in the league. But what did they do around him? You know, did they draft well enough? Have they developed well enough? Well, the Leafs
seemingly
aren't making
not.
The playoffs in the East. Where would they be in the West?
I know. I think there's such a, you know, fingers crossed, hopeful kind of a belief in this province that maybe if it's a Hall, Nugent, Hopkins, Dreisaitl versus Monahan, Goudreau,
fill in
Sam
blank.
Bennett, you know.
Right, sure.
All of the same age, highly skilled, highly touted, that maybe now we're we're headed in that direction.
And it has, they're both doing it the right way through the draft. The negative is you draft a kid at 18 and he's not going to be the guy you want him to be till he's 23.
I know.
You know, that's just a fact. Like,
so yeah, what do you make of that core? Because obviously in this city, people will have a very lopsided opinion. And I know you're from, you know, you're from St. Albert, so maybe you have somewhat of a biased opinion, but as best you can, the Hall, Eberle, Nugent Hopkins, Yakupov, that's what, and Schultz came in, but as far as the draft picks, that is what they parlayed those picks into. Mm-hmm. Where they are now, where they're going, who's going to be part of that in 5 years? Did they did the best they could. There was no Sidney Crosby. There was no seeming Connor McDavid. Taylor Hall's a very good player.
Yeah.
But what do you make of the work that Edmonton has done? And when they do come out of it, because all teams do, are they going to be that kind of a team?
Listen, those guys you name, they better be players. They're all first overall guys. Eberle wasn't. He was mid first round pick.
Yeah.
But Eberle's a really good player. I mean, he's not a savior. He's not going to win. You know, he's not going to be the MVP of the league, but he's a very good player.
Mm.
It's not what Edmonton has done with first overall picks. They better be good. Sam Bennett better play, right? Sean Monahan, I mean, was he six?
Yeah.
Better play. It's what you're doing with rounds 2, 3, 4, and 5. That's where the scales will be tipped. Who are you getting out of those rounds? And when you get them, how are you developing them? Taylor Hall he's the top scoring left winger over the last 2 years in the National Hockey League. Do you want more than that? How old is he? 22?
Yeah.
He's 22.
Somewhere there.
Yeah. Are we asking for more? Should he be better than that? I'll tell you what, there's not a left winger in hockey. He's got more points than this guy the last 2 seasons. As an observer of Taylor Hall, I think I'm pretty satisfied with that production.
Is there something they could have done, in terms of insulation or buffer with veterans?
Yes, no.
Did they let go of someone? Did they pass on someone? Just your thought as to maybe an inside look as to, you know, is there a guy that they could have had that they should have gotten?
How do you get to last place? You make a whole bunch of lousy decisions at the draft table, at the trade table, at the free agent table. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
And the same is said for Calgary. How do you get to 27th? Because you made a ton of mistakes along the way. You traded away draft picks. You drafted poorly. You
held on to guys too long.
Yeah. You held on to guys too long. Just a series of bad, there's no one bad decision. I would look back in Edmonton and say, what were they thinking when they got rid of Matt Green and Jarrett Stoll?
Yeah.
Two guys that are anchors on a Stanley Cup winning team in LA, right? They helped Edmonton a bit.
Needed that puck moving defenseman in Lubomir Vyshnovsky.
Right. Lubo Vyshnovsky. Where's he?
I don't know.
You know, are you so? Yeah. And that's just one of a series of heinous decisions. Personnel decisions that was made in that town, and thus you draft first overall all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I know Flames fan can look back at some things on here. Here's the difference though. When you're, you know, free agency isn't what it used to be. There's just not a big crop out there. When you're a rebuilding team, you can forget about the top tier of guys, right? They're not, you know, look who the Flames have signed for in their recent forays into the free agent market. Yuri Hudler's been pretty good, a good season last year.
Devin Setoguchi, Mason Raymond.
Mason Raymond, guys who were, you know, not the top guy out there. And you, frankly, you know, Derek Englund, you got to overpay for him. And Edmonton's every bit as guilty. You know, they overpaid for Benoit Pouliot big time. Fane out of New Jersey, the defenseman.
Yeah.
That's just who we are in Alberta, folks. They're two rebuilding non-playoff teams that are not a destination. So you're not going to get a whole lot better with your free agents. Dennis Weidman's not going to put you over the top, right?
It's hard for people to hear that. And we've talked about that because Rhett Warner comes in. He's like, you know, when you talk to players, there are many variables. You have kids, you have girlfriends, you have wives, and a lot of the wives, you know, going to the market on a Tuesday morning in San Jose or in Manhattan Beach is more attractive than maybe bussing your kid to dance class in the middle of winter. But Edmontonians are proud of their city. Calgarians are proud of theirs. It's hard for them to hear it. I think some people don't believe it. That why wouldn't you want to come here? Why wouldn't you want to be a part of what's going on? But you are fighting an uphill climb as one of these two teams in free agency.
Oh, there's no question. Now, the other thing has to be said. The school system in Calgary is, you know, of the 30 teams in the National Hockey League, public schools in Calgary and Edmonton are probably top three. So when you get an older married guy with kids and they look at things like that, that can be an advantage. Let's face it. They're beautiful, clean cities in which to live. Guys like being in Canada. Guys from here might want to come home like a Mason Raymond, right? Having said that, what you got to get to is this. Right now, the wife's saying, honey, we're going up there. You're not going to make the playoffs. It's freezing. What are we doing? You got to turn that around to the point where the husband says to the wife, honey, I want to win a ring.
Yeah,
I got a chance to win in Calgary. I got a chance to win in Edmonton. I'm making this call. Edmonton's overpaying me because that's what they do. Calgary's going to give me more money than the Rangers are going to give me. We're going to Calgary because we can win. When can a guy say that? How many years are we from that moment?
It's
right?
A few. And it's the best thing for both of these teams. Don't overpay. Don't bring in the shiny free agent. Draft and develop.
Sure.
Get to now Adirondack and Oklahoma City. Get the coaches.
Do it properly.
Get them in there. Do it right. And it kind of feels like both teams are kind of singing from the same hymn book right
well,
now.
Well, and so let's extrapolate on that. I look at a guy like Sam Bennett, right? The problem in Edmonton, and I think it's kind of cool for Flames fans because they've seen what's going on in Edmonton and they've seen the mistakes, I think. If there's, you know, they've watched a rebuild that's taken a long time. Will that help Calgary do it faster? I don't know, but it's kind of a cool template because they've watched Edmonton do it and yeah. You don't want to do it exactly the same way because it's taken too long. But everyone criticizes the Oilers for starting these kids in the NHL. In my mind, the problem is every one of those first-round picks that showed up went through training camp, and the coaches said, my God, our roster's so weak, he's one of our better players.
Yeah, yeah.
We can't send him down. So take that now to Bob Hartley come October 6th or whenever the season opens. Is he looking at Sam Bennett saying, you know what, he's one of my top six forwards. I can't send this guy to Adirondack. He's one of the best guys we've got.
Yeah.
Does that happen?
Personally, I don't think so. Because I think that's with Setoguchi and some of these other players. I think that's kind of buying Sam Bennett time,
that's
if
why
you will.
Bring those guys in,
and even just seeing him at the, you know, at the development camp, he's still, you know, pushed off pucks. He's 180 pounds, right?
Johnny Goodrow.
Yeah, he's a young guy. I can't wait to see what it's going to be.
Me too.
I don't know if it's going to work. I think it's either going to like be really good or just be nothing. I don't know that he's just going to be average. I think it's going to be. I think he's a special guy. I kind of feel like he's going to win a job here.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's going to be the guy that Bob Hartley and the staff are going to say, well, if we are basing anything on merit, he's earned the job and he's given us no choice but to keep him.
He thinks the game better than 80% NHLers already.
Yeah.
Right. Which is
pretty special.
You know, Treliving said this yesterday and I couldn't agree more. He said, the players know. And he talked about watching Goodrow in the World Championships last year. And I remember, I remember the same moment. We must have been watching the same game. But it's late in the game. The goalie's pulled. U.S. needs a goal. And he's on the ice. And I'm thinking, oh, boy, you know what? If you're one of the six skaters out there, what's the coach do? He puts the six best guys out there. And Goodrow was one of them.
Yeah.
But more so, and this is what Brad was saying yesterday, he said, the players know. And they dropped that puck. And immediately, everyone started looking for Johnny Goodrow to give him the puck. To get something going, because we need a goal. There's 60 seconds left. Let's give our best guy the puck and see what happens. And
already
hadn't played. Well, I played one game in the NHL. So that's, I mean, there's no doubt there's a lot there. Now, can you play success? It's a sliding scale.
Yeah.
When you're that small, you got to be that good. Is he good enough to be that small?
He might be.
What's he weigh?
Boy, I don't
know. Is he 160?
Has he just had lunch or
I'm
not?
I'm telling you what.
I know.
He is a small. That if he's that small, he's got to be that good.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the fun. Maybe he is that good.
Maybe he is that good.
Maybe he's good enough to be that small.
And if he is that good, he'd be one of those guys, like you say, in rounds 3, 4, 5, who you got to find some guys.
You got to get them.
And he might be one of those guys. We'll take a break. Talking about, you know, moments. I remember one of the first moments in a scrum with you. It was at the Dome, and it's a story that I've told a few times on the air because I think I remember it well. I don't expect, well, you might, but it stuck with me. We'll get into it when we come back. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Play Hockey Talk with Boomer only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
8:49. This happens always. You get together. It's like, well, we'll sit down for an hour. Oh, geez, what are we going to talk about for an hour? And then you look like, we got 10 minutes left. Where did it go?
What happened here?
It's crazy, right? And you've done Mark Spector from Sportsnet in studio.
Thanks.
You do
for
the
radio.
Yeah, well, you do the radio stuff too, and you can appreciate sometimes how hard it is to fill an hour
in August,
and then other times how it just kind of flies by. Spec is putting together a new book, the kind of reliving the Battle of Alberta in its heyday back in the 80s. And to tell you how invested people are, this was just on Twitter. At Trevalin1789 says, as an Edmonton Oilers fan living and working in Calgary, I hate the Flames more than anything. He used the Twitter handle of the Oilers. The Oilers themselves just favorited that tweet. So we want so badly to hate each other.
No.
We would love to hate each other, but it's hard to think we'll ever get back.
They used to break each other's orbital bones. Now we're waiting for the Flames Twitter account to shoot back at the Oilers Twitter account.
Yeah, we'll maybe get into a Twitter spat. I had said before
what
the yeah,
here?
I said before the break, and I guess looking back and kind of because I'm thinking of the date, I think it was the year of the outdoor game. So I've known you from before that, but I remember it was in the Flames locker room, and everyone was writing their stories in advance of the outdoor, the Heritage Classic, and at the time, Rennie Bork was on one of his tears that he was known to go on from time to time when he was not on the missing persons report. He was leading the team in scoring. Similarly, Jerome was having a early season slump, so I think Rennie Bork was actually leading the team, was a offensive player of the week, and you were in that scrum, and I was very happy just to let the pros ask the questions, which I'm wont to do from time to time. And you had said, you know, here you are, you're leading this team in scoring. This has been, it's been about Jerome for so many years. Just talk about being a guy to carry that load. And his answer was, yeah, it has been Jerome for a long time. And boy, if I can just chip in here and there and provide some secondary scoring, that'd be great. And you had said, well, you have more goals and points now than Jerome has. You're leading the team. Do you not maybe see yourself as one of the primary scorers, one of the go-to guys on this team? Mm-hmm. And he stood there for probably a good 2 seconds with a blank screen on his face.
Vacant.
He had not thought of that in one at all. That maybe he should think about, yeah, maybe I could lead this team in scoring.
I could drive this bus, you mean? Is that what you're saying?
It's like, oh my God, are you serious? Like, you're just showing up to the rink, taking your shifts, and if the puck goes in, well, you know, whatever. Yeah, and I laughed about that one. I just remember kind of the... Because I think we both kind of had the look on our face. Well, you could, have you not thought about that? No, really. Fair enough.
It takes so many elements to make a really good player.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just the skill and the size and the ability. It's the drive and it's the mental approach. And that's a perfect example, Rennie Bork, of a guy who has every tool in the toolbox except for the drive to be a consistently great player.
With no one behind the wheel.
Right. And it never even occurred to him that he could be a great player. Yet, looking at the tools that he has, he's got more tools than some great players I can think of. But there's something missing.
Physical, skate, shoots it.
Right.
Yeah.
Plays in Montreal, had a couple of killer playoff games.
Yeah.
And then when the series was on the line, what happened to Bork?
Well, you know, and it's great because I beat up Bork mostly because I like to get guys going, but because I do think he really kind of undersells himself. So whenever Bork has a good game, the guys come through in the text line or Twitter and say, oh, your boy, eh?
Your boy.
Oh, yeah. Your boy had a couple. What about your boy now?
There's a lot of hockey player there, but we've both, and many of the listeners can think of guys where you look at him and you go, man, there's a lot of player in this guy. You know, the guy for me, and I don't say this because he was an Oiler. I love this guy when he played for Chicago. Ben Eager. Right?
Yeah.
There is so much hockey player in Ben Eager.
First round pick, right?
Because he's got a wrist shot better than probably 80% of the guys in the league. He's huge and strong, fight when he has to. He'll hit you like a truck. Can skate for a man his size, one of the better skaters in the league. Doesn't have the toolbox. Can't play. He's in the KHL.
Rafi Torres, similar to me.
Rafi Torres.
When he and Stoll and all those guys kind of broke in together, here's a first round pick. Great trade. Traded out Brewer. What did they get? Whatever they got in that deal.
Good player.
And yeah, Skate Like the Wind will knock you out if you're not paying attention.
Another guy with a real good wrist shot.
Yeah.
Surprises goalies all the time.
And just...
does, but hey, he's been in the league a long time and made a,
yeah.
You know, the interesting thing for Rafi is the game's changed. Like, his greatest asset was the big hit, and he can't throw that hit anymore.
No.
He was the he is a predator.
He would catch guys off balance just about a half a second before, as they were going to hit him along the side boards. He'd just kind of just come off the boards a half a second early before they were ready, and they'd be on their can.
Can he be as valuable when you take the predatorial hit out of his game?
Can
he still be a guy you want to pay and play? We're going to find out.
What is the West going to be like this year? Because all of a sudden, and I mean, Kessler was in the West, but now he's with Getzlaff. You've got Jason Spezza joining the Dallas Stars. The arms race in the West, I mean, for the Flames and Oilers, probably going to be a long season anyway. But when you're playing the majority of your games against the West,
it's tough.
Man.
It's wicked. And, you know, San Jose is maybe not quite as good, but they're still really good. Anaheim's an awesome team. Should have beat the Kings last year. Kings won the Cup. Chicago's
won
the Cup this year. St. Louis has been on the precipice of getting over that thing for a long time. They're the best regular season team maybe in the Central. Winnipeg's big and strong and getting better, in my opinion.
I look at Dallas.
Dallas is killer good.
This Nichushkin kid slid to them, at 9?
Yep.
He's going to be a superstar. Seguin looks... really unbelievable. Good. Ben, and they brought in
Spezza and Hemsky.
Yeah.
You know, Hemsky is in a place where he needs to be. Here's another guy's never going to drive the bus for you. But if he's my support scorer and my support second line right wing guy, he's a good second line right winger.
Yeah. And as goofy as it sounds, and maybe Peter Laviolette's going to have a hard time, but going into Nashville, and all of a sudden what did they bring in there? They got James Neal, Olli Jokinen.
Yeah.
Goofy, what's his name? Mike Ribeiro. But it's guys that can play the game better.
Yeah.
So even if that's a half a goal more every other game, that's going to amount for something, I think, over the course of a season. But
I think there should be a reality show about Mike Ribeiro living in Nashville.
Yeah. I tell this story, too. I remember when he was with Dallas.
Good luck.
He walked out of the room. I swear his suit was made of tinfoil. It was a shiny... shiny side out for what it's worth. But the West
is very good.
As a spectator, you couldn't want anything more. As a competitor, man.
Well, this is it. I mean, what would you rather have? I think you'd rather have playoff games. Would you rather have Calgary in the East with a puncher's chance, which every team has out there? Or would you rather see those teams coming through the dome every second day and watching? You're watching great hockey. Can your team keep up? In Edmonton, same thing. Can you... you know, the size of those teams and the skill of them, the California teams are incredibly good. Vancouver will take a fall this year.
Yeah, what do you make there?
They're not as good as they were. That's what I make there. Miller will help them in goal. I mean, they've got goaltending that they didn't have.
The fact that they've been de-Tortorella'd, I just wonder if that's addition by subtraction to a certain extent there.
Yeah. Jimmy Benning is going to be a really good GM, I think. He comes from excellent stock out of Pete Chiarelli's department in Boston. Chiarelli is one of the premier GMs in hockey. Benning will be really good. Willie Desjardins, the guy who I first met when he was assistant coach of the University of Calgary Dinosaurs with George Kingston back in about 1984.
Yeah.
He's a good man and a good, solid lifetime coach. Going to be awesome.
We always used to laugh when I was working in Red Deer and you do the out-of-town coach interview.
Okay.
And it wouldn't matter. The Medicine Hat Tigers could be 90-0 and scoring 10 goals a night. And Willie, your team's really going. What's happening with you? Oh, you know things. But boy, this Red Deer club, you don't want to take them. Every single time he would take no praise as quickly as he could. Oh, but this goaltender here in Red Deer, he's going to make things tough, and we know we've got our hands full, and good Lord will, and maybe we'll be able to hang in there with this every single time. And he was just that guy, but clearly with what he's been able to do at all these different levels.
Yeah. Well, won the Calder Cup last year in Dallas's farm. Vancouver, they don't have my storyline out of there is this year for me is, are the Sedins declining or was that a Tortorella thing? Do they pick it up and find that pace that they used to have?
Yeah,
because they were world-class players, but they took a huge dip last year. Was that Tortorella's fault, or is this the start of the decline of the Twins?
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see.
We look at that too with an Iginla comparable.
Oh, for sure.
Whereas, you know, they're at that other side of 30 and the wear and tear. They've played a lot of hockey and all that.
Can they lead you?
Quietly, still. I wonder if Radim Verbata is going to really do a lot for them.
Yeah.
Because I think he's kind of an underrated player. Did a lot in Phoenix.
Huh? Who's the second line in Vancouver?
Yeah.
Right?
Who's Bo Horvat. Line?
Oh, boy. They're just not as deep and not as good. They're not. I don't think they'll make the playoffs, but they're at this point, are they better than the two Alberta teams? Yes, they're better than the two Alberta teams.
So the book, do you have a title for this upcoming book? Do you don't want to give it away yet?
No, I'm kind of going under the working title of Don't Go for Coffee.
Sure.
Which was
the Dave Brown quote.
The Dave Brown quote, but I'm not sure I'll stick with that.
When
I got some time to decide.
So what's the timeline? So you'll finish it. It needs to then be obviously put to print and then vetted and corrected and all that.
Right. I've got a publisher in Stuart McClellan. I'm McClellan Stuart.
Make sure you get that right.
Yeah, no kidding. I know a guy named Stuart McClellan. Imagine that.
Related to Kevin?
Yes,
speaking
exactly.
of tough guys from that era.
Very tough, a little bit crazy guy. We those guys that are a little bit crazy. I've got a publisher and I will file the copy to them by January 1st. And then there's quite a long editing process. Long story short, book hits the shelves in October, ready for Christmas.
If you like the Flames, but hate, if your hate for the Oilers supersedes your love for the Flames, or vice versa, this will be a must-have book in a year's time.
I'll be back. I'll be back when it's on the shelves.
Yeah,
we'll,
man.
Come in and thanks very much.
Welcome anytime.
For the shot down here.
And, you bet.
It'll be a lot of fun. It's fun. It's just fun to go back to a time when hockey was supreme here.
Yeah.
And we'll get there again.
It was right here. We were the belly of the beast.
Yeah.
For some of the best hockey in the NHL.
A long time ago.
On the QE2, which it was not at that time. Mark Spector with Sportsnet. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
901, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.